folks, welcome to another episode of Film Study. It's time for one last thing this week, talking about the loss of Odafe Owe and what that means to the Baltimore Ravens, how they may move forward without him. Joining me to do that is my every other week co-host, Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing well on a personal level. This football season has been pretty disappointing. We get so geared up in the offseason just to enjoy the regular season, and to have it go so poorly so quickly has been really disappointing. But otherwise, I'm doing great.
Very tough, very tough. And a couple of the UDFAs who made the team, was their play in part in this last week, in the case of Lowry and the case of Keon Martin, that kind of instigated, I think, some of the move that happened in the trade of Odafe Owe this week. Went to the Chargers for Alohi Gilman. The first thought, especially when they signed Gardner Johnson at the same time, who comes with a whole package of baggage himself, well, not just a carry-on, it was a couple steamer trunks worth, is that there's something else wrong in the Ravens secondary in terms of injuries. But I think, you know, now it kind of does look like they're doing it just to move Hamilton back to slot corner, where he can be more effective as a big nickel and have a bigger presence around the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, when they made the move for the two safeties, I heard you say earlier in the week that perhaps it portends an injury in the secondary that we did not yet know of. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem that is the case. And in fact, it looks like Hamilton is slated to play the Rams game. Not Hamilton. Hamilton is slated to play, but also Humphrey. Seems like he is likely to play as well. So at first I thought perhaps Humphrey could have a longer term injury and they would want Hamilton's versatility in the slot. But, you know, now it looks like perhaps they want Humphrey in the slot and they want Hamilton to play some dime snaps, because their linebacking situation has been pretty miserable with Roquan out.
It has been. They've also been without Chidobe Awuzie. He has been ruled out for this game. So it could be that this is a game where Humphrey plays on the outside. Jaire Alexander is the other choice to play on the outside. I don't think the Ravens are really excited about that at this point, based on how they used him last week. You know, you're down to seven defensive backs, and Jaire Alexander is one of them, and you still don't play him in the first half except for one dime snap. That's fairly indicative of how they feel about you. It gives you a very strong indication. But anyway, let's move on. Talk about Odafe Owe and how the Ravens replace him. I feel like he's kind of the Daniel Faalele of the defense in some ways, a guy who is constantly berated for his play, but in truth, really has not played that poorly at all. He's one of the few Ravens who's getting pressure this season, although he hasn't had a sack yet.
I think a lot of the criticism comes from the fact that he was a first-round pick. He had and continues to have freakish athleticism. His rookie year, he came on very strong in the early few games of that rookie year and made a tremendous impact in a couple games and played a lot as a rookie. And so you would hope a guy with those kinds of tools, that kind of pedigree, and that kind of explosive ability when he stepped on the field his rookie year would have grown into something more forceful. And this year it's been pretty curious. Not only does he not seem to have improved, he seems to have, you know, his advanced stats and his pressure rate is still there, but surprisingly, he wasn't playing nearly as many snaps as I anticipated, especially with Van Noy out. And instead, they've chosen to play Mike Green substantially more and a lot more on first down and second down and rundown situations to set the edge, which I thought would have been an Owe specialty, especially given his experience. So it's been a pretty odd year for him regardless.
He's gotten bigger and gained 20 pounds, supposedly good weight coming into camp. I can't help but think he might be a little bit slower than he was before, but he's got one of the most extreme pass run splits you'll ever see. 133 pass snaps and only 33 run plays he's played. That's a 4-to-1 relationship there. You very rarely see anything like that, other than the most extreme situational pass rushers. So that's odd. And he's a guy who's played, you know, 67% of the snaps, 65% of the snaps in the past. So you don't really expect that kind of a very limited usage for him. I think the Ravens did want to kind of save him as a pass rusher, given they had really limited assets there. And Now I wonder, you know, who's going to play those downs? Does this mean a much bigger role for Mike Green on third down? Does it mean that Tavius Robinson gets more third down snaps? He's certainly playing as hard as anybody is. You know, he's given a high level of effort. But, you know, Dafe Owe, he was the highest pedigree pass rusher the Ravens still had. Van Noy had a good year last year, and he's had a good career. There's no question about that. But in terms of who's a pure pass rush specialist, I mean, Owe is it. Owe's the guy who's been most successful for the Ravens over time. Last year, people loved his year with 10 sacks. Actually, he's a little down on it because his pressure rate was off, and he had a very high close rate. This year, he's more back to like 23 with a higher pressure rate and a lower close rate, and that's not good. That's not good either. So give me the flukishly high number of quarterback hits and sacks. He's still got 5 quarterback hits this year, but he still has 0 sacks at this point.
The other thing that was that has been surprising about the way they've utilized him this year is that coming out of college, he had famously no sacks his senior or his last year at Penn State. And coming into the draft, he was touted as a solid edge setter, can play the run well, and he would grow into a pass rusher.
How many times have we heard that? Because we hear the same thing about David Ajabo, and nothing could be further from the truth in terms of his ability to set the edge.
Yeah, one of the things defensively that has plagued the Ravens this year is that they cannot stop the run at all. And so the fact that he's still receiving such a tremendously lopsided split of pass rush snaps to run down snaps, and they can't stop the run, you would have thought they would have at least put him in there on rundowns at least last couple games to see if that could help stop the bleeding. And they haven't done that, and it's been surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's that's a fair expectation that they would have used him more on the run and in their great need without Van Noy in particular to see more snaps. But yeah, such has not been the case. Well, let's move forward and talk about what options the Ravens have to replace him, because I see 4 different ways they could potentially do it. I kind of want to go through each of them with you. The first is just looking at the players in-house, and it's obviously going to be a possible solution for a team who's in a tailspin, and the Ravens may or may not feel that they can get it corrected. They may feel like it's worth trading some draft capital to still try and make a move to win this year. But they've got Green, Van Noy, and Robinson in-house. The Ravens have been in that position before where they've got 3 guys for 2 spots. They have David Ajabo, and then they have both Malik Ham and Kamen Rucker on the practice squad. Now, Ham is more of a versatile, can set the edge, can rush the passer guy. Kamen Rucker is more of a pure pass rush guy.
Yeah, I anticipate Green, Van Noy, and Robinson get the lion's share of the snaps this week. When they had Van Noy out 2 weeks ago and Ajabo was up, he still only played, 9 snaps in the Kansas City game or something, very minimally?
Yeah, I think it was 6 and then 18 maybe the next week, but neither one was taking a reasonable share. I'll get you those numbers.
Yeah, but even when they were shorthanded the week without Van Noy, Ajabo barely played in that game. And so I honestly, the way they've deployed him this year, it doesn't seem like they have much faith in him. Is their willingness to trade Owe a sign that they now have newfound belief? I don't suspect so. The guys on the practice squad, Ham and Rucker, we mentioned they both played well in the preseason. I think one of the things that we've noticed recently with the defensive performances that have let the Ravens down these last couple games is that you can't count on preseason performance to dictate anything in the regular season. A number of our, you know, undrafted guys that we thought would be solid based on their preseason performance fell in their faces last week. So I would be surprised if they leaned really heavily on Rucker or Ham. They might call one of them up for this week, but I suspect that they will just go with a heavy rotation of Green, Van Noy, and Robinson, try to get into the bye, and then assess from there.
Yeah, this really, in order to play those 3 guys only, or those 3 guys primarily, they need to control snap count and keep the opponent under 70 snaps and whatnot. But they keep losing snaps by a huge margin, and they've lost now snap the off ball offensively 102 fewer times through 5 games. It's 20.4 per game It's one of the really extreme numbers I've ever seen in terms of opponents being able to sustain drives and just grind the Ravens' nose in it. If those four are out there, Ajabo really needs to play a fair amount more. He's played, I have the numbers here, 6-19 and then 12 snaps in the three games. So whatever the Ravens want to say about what their views are about David Ajabo, their actual usage with him is the more telling fact, and he's not getting a lot of playing time. Neither Ham nor Rucker will be activated this week, would be my prediction. They'd have to make a roster move tomorrow to activate a player like Okoye to the 53. I don't see them doing that. So without that move being made, then Okoye and Huntley are the two guys they have to elevate. So I don't see them moving Ham or Rucker up to the 53. So I think that they will not play this week, would be my guess.
And they've played Urban on the edge at times. It's not giving you juice in the rushing in the pass rush game, but you know, he's someone that has experience doing it. So maybe they'll rely on a heavy dose of just rotating who they have.
And uncovered. So you play three down linemen, only one outside linebacker with two inside linebackers. Typically that is possible. It makes you a little bit smaller. But Urban is a good space denier, good edge setter. So it's not that wouldn't be a bad move. Beyond that, I mean, there's the possibility, I suppose, of a free agent signing. And my first question is, I don't really know who's left on the market among veterans that the Ravens think still has a little juice, but they did get Kyle Van Noy in week 4 of 23. And he obviously has done a lot for the Ravens since.
Yeah, that was obviously a terrific signing. He was someone, though, that we knew about going into the season that they had talked to. They brought in Drake Jackson, I think this week or last week, who was a former second-round pick who didn't play last year, recovering from an injury. You know, I don't anticipate someone like that is going to give the team any juice. There were a lot of people throwing around that they could have brought in Clowney in the offseason or early in the season, and the Cowboys beat them to it. So now he's off the market. And after that, I don't frankly know if there is anyone out there of note. I would imagine that if everything stays the same, I imagine they try to get someone else on the roster. Who that is in the free agent space at edge rusher, I don't know. Perhaps, though, they maybe make a move in a different space. You know, one of the big names that's still out there is Christian Wilkins. They also have a need on the interior. I know he also has a lot of baggage, but hey, if you're opening the locker room doors to
Gardner Johnson,
you know, yeah, perhaps you may as well just go down with the ship and bring Wilkins in as well. I mean, he was pretty solid last year. He was pretty solid last year in Las Vegas. I think his PFF graded him out as like a top 25 interior defender. I mean, the Ravens can pretty much use all the help they can get in the front seven right now. So everything really is on the table as far as bringing someone in that's on the street.
Yeah, Wilkins is still doesn't turn 30 until December, former first round pick. Yeah, he could get a job. He was a great player in 2023 with Miami. And you know, been one of the top interior pass rushers for several years. It'd be nice if the Ravens could get a guy like that. I don't know where he is physically, and I think that might have been part of the problem. The other part of the problem is some of the off-field stuff, I think, that has gotten him in a little bit of trouble or gotten, you know, dogged him a little bit in terms of Twitter and whatnot. It is what it is, but maybe there's another free agent signing out there. One thing I didn't include in kind of some things I was thinking about was they could sign somebody off somebody else's practice squad. I don't know who's left in terms of people they would like as pass rushers when they have two guys on their own practice squad. They might not go that route, but there might be a player out there they think is, this guy can help us. You mentioned Drake Jackson. I don't think he's an ideal solution. He's 2 years removed from playing for starters. Didn't play at all in 24 and played limited in 23. So it's not like he wouldn't be a terrible bet on a 2-year deal or something if you signed him now to that sort of thing. But he's an unknown commodity, to be sure.
Yeah, I going back to Wilkins, he did have a Jones fracture in his foot last year and had surgery. And so part of the dispute with Vegas was around his rehabilitation and where he was, you know, where he was rehabbing, and the team wasn't really happy with how he was handling that, was among one of the reasons why he was let go. The other interesting thing about bringing in someone with that pedigree, if he was released, does that mean they could bring him in on a vet min contract while he's still getting paid what he was owed? You know, there's a lot of consideration there. The Ravens aren't flush with available cap dollars, although they do have a decent amount from moving away. But one of the considerations in the money that they have, I think you pointed this out with Voss and Friday Morning GM, is they can roll that money over into next year, and they might need to use it if they are unable to get Lamar extended. So
yeah,
it's not as if they have that full, you know, that full amount to play with.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, that money probably is already accounted for in exactly that way. Or, you know, just being prepared to go into a negotiation with Lamar with having an extra bag of money on the side that you can say, okay, we're not going to be pushed into doing something that doesn't make sense for the team. If we have to pay it $72 million next year, then you'll pay it $72 million or whatever that number is. All right, you know, another possibility is that they would trade for a player. They could get a, you know, a cheap replacement, maybe somebody else who's on the outs with another team. That would be a possibility. I know a number of names have come up. Miami is looking probably to be sellers this month, and they've got a couple of guys in Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb who might meet the Ravens' needs.
Yeah, those guys could certainly be options. I'd be curious what their contract situations look like. I think Chubb had signed a big deal when he came to Miami, and I believe Phillips, they might not have extended yet. I think he was the same draft year as Owe, so he's either been extended or he's on his fifth year option now. You know, that would be a potential. I like, given the way that the trade that they made in sending Owe out, and bringing in Gilman and not getting a whole lot in the draft exchange, I feel like they do have something else up their sleeve. I would be surprised if DaCosta didn't make any additional moves, even if they lose this game this weekend. They still have Lamar coming back and going into the bye. And so I don't think they're going to punt on the season, even if they're 1-5 going into the bye. So I anticipate they will bring someone in or make another move. I just, projecting who that could be, you know, some of the other big names that you've talked about are, you know, the Dexter Lawrence types. And I just don't think any of those guys are going to get moved at the deadline, especially, you know, if you're the Giants. Like, you looked terrific last night against Philadelphia on Thursday Night Football. Like, you want to play for the, you know, build the culture with the guys you have right now. So I don't really know who is out there, but I do expect that they will make some sort of move here.
Other guys have been mentioned include a reunion with Calais Campbell, who's now 39 years old and is having a pretty good year, I believe. I don't have his sack total right in front of me, but I did see that he was playing fairly well. He might have three sacks already. But anyway,
he's someone I wish they wouldn't have let him get out the door. I wanted him to stay in Baltimore until he retired.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a great culture player, and that the team could use a player like that. But gets a good amount of pressure still, even at his age. And he's got a fairly extreme pass to run split now, where he used to be a guy, he'd play maybe about 2-1 or 1.5-1 when he was early in his career. But now it's like 3-1. In terms of his pass to run splits. Atlanta's really using it. Arizona now is really using him on a situational pass rushing basis. I think if he came to the Ravens, I'm pretty sure that's what he would be as well, as a guy they would plug in with Travis Jones on third down to try and get some pass rush. And, you know, that really sounds good when you talk about it.
Well, especially compared to what they have now with Matt Ibike out and with the front seven looking like it's been the last couple of weeks.
Yep. Okay. So anyway, I don't know about you, but I'm not expecting a big deal in terms of draft capital traded. And it is one of the questions with a player like Chubb is that since Miami has to eat some money and they've got him at a $1 million salary for this year because they already paid him. Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove. His bonus check for his entire year's salary to prorate that in the future, they'd have to eat a ton of money, and they probably would want to get draft capital compensation for the effective cap hit they'd be eating on him. So I don't think you get him for a, you know, for a floating fourth round pick where the Ravens might be able to get him with a comp pick at the end of the fourth round.
Not unless there's something wrong behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, another possibility is they roll the dice on who they have, which we've already talked about in terms of finding the replacement in house, but that they just defer until the draft next year to find their edge rusher, which I think is a perfectly good strategy, by the way. I really don't like the pay a lot of draft capital for a half year band-aid option on a team that's starting, you know, from the bottom of a 1-5 hill. It just does not seem like a smart move at all to me. I think that they'd be better off holding onto their picks, making their selections next year and trying to win with that. As it is, they had three undrafted guys make the roster this year in a incredibly hotly contested fight. So I don't think they've lost their mojo in terms of draft picks. I think they need to take some more shots and hopefully find some winners this next year.
I agree with that take. One of the really curious things about when you step back and look at this season, going into the season, we were all convinced that the roster was flush with talent and this was one of the best rosters in the league. And they've had some injuries, of course, but they also had some tremendous vulnerability through the first several weeks of the season and have not played up to that level that we anticipated. And so, you know, whenever I am thinking about, you know, whenever I hear someone say they need to make this move or make that move, I'm confounded. I can't decide, is this roster actually really good still and underperforming? Or did all of a sudden those players that we believed were so talented coming into the season, were we just all wrong and those players aren't talented? I imagine it's a little bit in the middle, but I would lean to the fact that these players are probably still pretty talented and they just need to figure out how to fix whatever is going wrong. And making a big swing trade is probably not going to be the move that gets them right.
Yeah, if I were to point to some things that have gone wrong for the 2025 Ravens, one of the ones I just point to is you had at least three players get old quickly. They got old right overnight. And Roquan Smith, he's a three-time All-Pro the last 3 years, but he got old really quickly. And I don't know if that means he'll ever really be back or not from an injury. He might have a lot of trouble, even, you know, just a hamstring injury. He might have a lot of trouble playing well the rest of this season or next season even. And you're already at a point where his cap number is so high, the Ravens are going to be forced into a very difficult choice at the end of this year. They can save $7 million in cap to not have him. It'll probably be more expensive than that to replace him in a lot of ways, whether they go to the open market or they spend draft capital to do it. It's a a high value position to be sure. Well, okay. It's an expensive position to fill. Let's put it that way. And a lot of people would tell you, just do it with platooning. I know that's what Voss would say. And I would generally too, is I don't mind paying for one good linebacker, but I definitely don't want to pay for two. And, you know, it didn't bother me, the Roquan deal originally, as much as it probably does now. And as some of that balloon payment is coming due, but, yeah, I think that next year they're going to have to try and figure on that. If you talk about other players who got old, Humphrey got old in a big hurry. And I think there's a real question about what they do with him. They probably have to restructure his contract to keep him or just cut him. They might re-sign him and try and move him to safety. They might decide he could go another year at corner, at slot corner, with the understanding he's going to move to safety if they sign him to a new deal. But I think the money needs to be restructured on that deal probably to make it work. And he's got a very similar deal to Roquan in terms of they cut him to save about $7 million or they have a very large cap value next year. And then the third player, whether you like it or not, is Derrick Henry. I mean, obviously, it's not like he's played terribly this year, and I think he played better with Lamar Jackson back and with a good offensive line. But we definitely have seen that it was Lamar Jackson who was benefiting Derrick Henry more than the other way around. And now, additionally, I think Derrick Henry is probably just a touch slower than he was last year in terms of doing Derrick Henry things.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard for me to agree strongly or disagree strongly with your take on each of those players, because, you know, again, at the end of last season, all of those players were playing terrifically. And then all of a sudden this season, and Henry looked great in week one and Lamar mm-hmm. was on the field, obviously. And then but none of these players have really looked great for the remainder of the season. And, you know, something, this is more of an anecdotal thing. I haven't done a study here, but it does appear to me on offense that, you know, they're like, Henry is predominantly in the game first and second down on rundowns, and they're bringing in heavy sets, and they have Tylan Wallace on the field as the only receiver, or they have Tylan Wallace and one other receiver. And, you know, it's like every time I see that, I'm like, oh, it is this play, and he gets stuffed in the backfield. And the line, while they've been an average line, they don't seem to have a lot of physicality in the run game at the point of attack to just get him a little crease. And so, you know, is that Henry? I mean, we always knew that he needed a little bit of a runway to get going. So, you know, Humphrey has looked a little bit slow this year. To your point about Roquan, that Roquan deal, I think it was a fine deal. I think something that I was not happy with at the time was that they did the simple restructure with him this offseason, which converted his salary into bonus that gets spread over the last 2 years. And now if they get rid of, so they freed up money this year, but now if they do have to get rid of him, it's going to hurt more on the back end of that deal.
Yeah, but since they have $14 million in current fungible capital, I don't really see that as that big an issue, because you pay me now, pay me later on that money, whether it's going to be this year or next year. It doesn't make the cut more painful next year. It'd be more painful if you made a bunch of other signings with that money and then they didn't pan out and then you had to cut it.
I see what you're saying. What you're saying, because they haven't, because they freed that money off their cap. Mm-hmm. If they don't fill it, they can roll it over to next year. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the middle linebacker situation, platooning question, you know, the thing, I think I pointed this out when we were on the draft day podcast discussing the Teddy Buchanan selection and why would they pick him in that position. And, you know, the Ravens have really struggled in the middle of the defense ever since, Mosley left. After Mosley left, they've really struggled bringing in guys, drafting guys, getting guys off the street. You know, they drafted Queen in the first round. He really struggled those first years until they brought Roquan in. And the coverage in the middle of the field was the bane of those early Lamar year defenses. And Roquan really helped solidify that. And so I understand that middle linebacker isn't a premium position, but if you see, you know, what Fred Warner does and some of these other players, you know, we've seen what bad linebacking has done in Baltimore. I mean, this year they're living through it right now. You're on mute.
In 2019, they also brought in LJ Fort and Josh Bynes, and they completely turned the defense around. So I don't think, you know, the problem
that's a good point. It's not that they necessarily, you don't need a big contract guy to fill it, but you need someone that knows what they're doing, and they've had trouble finding those. I mean, you could find, I mean, that's a perfect.
LJ Fort was kind of the perfect player in that. I think he was kind of the more important one of the two in a sense, because he's the one who had some real coverage skills to get around. That guy is hard to find, by the way. That guy's a little bit hard to find. The Josh Bynes being the Mike linebacker, you know, they brought him in twice to bail out the defense, and he did it before they got Roquan. If you're going to try and do what a general manager has to do, which is choose the positions,
make
tough choices about where you're not going to pay money, where am I not going to spend because I know I can do it synthetically and do it in other ways. You know, inside linebacker is not a terrible choice. You know, they have a good spine of the defense otherwise, with Starks and Hamilton on the back end, with Travis Jones in the middle of the defensive line. I mean, they should be able to build around that, assuming they can get Jones re-signed, to have, I think, a pretty effective defense in 25.
Right. So before we wrap up this conversation, going back to Owe and how to replace him, the one thing I wanted to discuss with you is whether they could essentially not replace him, but cover up for the loss by implementing a more aggressive defensive scheme as they move forward. You've noted on a number of podcasts, they don't stunt a lot. They don't run a lot of simulations like they've done in the past. They're probably trying to play conservative with so many young players. But frankly, the defense, you know, curiously, I was looking this up because anecdotally watching this defense, they don't strike me as a defense that's giving up a ton of big plays and blown plays. I mean, we've lamented the time of possession differential this team has suffered this year. And frankly, what is killing them is the fact that they just give up 7-yard plays back to back to back to back. They actually rank 16th, middle of the pack, in explosive play rate allowed. So defensively, they are playing a lot of soft coverage. They're not getting beat over the top. They're just getting beat in the middle of the field. And it's leading to these long drives that are killing them on the time of possession. Conversely, they lead the league in explosive play rate. So in a lot of these games where even the games where they are playing well, they're scoring quickly. And so, you know, one of the ways they could combat this is by being more aggressive on defense. Maybe they'll give up some explosive plays, but then they'll get the ball back.
Okay, so first of all, I'm all for that regardless of the defense, is taking more risk on defense. Offense basically loves to reduce variance because average yards per play amounts will take you right down the field to score every single drive. That's why you hear about 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense, because people can very easily say, well, let me see, if you gain 3 yards four times, that's 12 yards, that's a first down every time. That's exact. Defenses need to avoid that. They need to generate big plays with turnovers, penalties, negative plays like sacks, tackles for loss. And otherwise, the last one that they have is kind of become more and more and more difficult, which is consecutive incompletions, has become more and more difficult as the league has matured, because so much has been done to juice up the passing game. Quarterbacks are better. It's easier to scheme, short wins. It's harder to scheme quick pressures on third down. Teams don't really like to play man because of the explosive play risk. So, you know, particularly with another big one has been that coaches are becoming more adept at making optimal choices on fourth down. Before that occurred, you know, you had better chances on defense to get off the field on fourth and two and fourth and one when you knew that the other opposing team would chicken out in terms of not going for it. But there's been so much math and so much coverage now on social media of just how stupid that is, you know, that you don't see coaches, you know, giving up, and you don't really see fans upset about it when teams go for it on fourth and two in their own end or fourth and one at their own 15-yard line.
Right.
You don't really see teams getting upset about that. So I want to see more aggression. I can't directly place the problem on Orr, largely because of who they faced so far. So they faced Josh Allen, they faced Jared Goff, who reads hot very well. Mm-hmm. They faced Patrick Mahomes, and they faced Stroud, who is a notch below all of them. But that's still four good quarterbacks plus out of five games that have known how to deal with being pressured.
And
I don't know that I can get on them too much about it. Last game, it was certainly true that they were more effective with stunts and blitzes than they were otherwise. And he didn't do a lot of it. I think there's a certain arrogance that exists within the fan base in general that they know better about schematic components. I would just say I have questions about some schematic components. Not that I know better, but please tell me why. Please tell me why, Zach Orr, you go light with the nickel six times against an extra offensive lineman, for example. I need to understand that more. I'm not to the point of asking a pointed question with regard to why he's reduced deceptive pass rush components. But I do want to know, you know, why is he not trying to match up pound for pound with more of these offensive units, which try and go heavy against the Ravens?
Yes, I completely agree with that. And your point is well taken. We're not in the locker room. These guys have forgotten way more football than we'll ever know. And so, I don't presume to know schematically, assume they should do certain things over other things. It just seems like one thing the defense could tolerate tremendously is more variance, because right now they're getting nickel and dime to death.
To tolerate, they need to generate it.
And
I'm with you, Brad. I'm on that. Every defense that I've ever watched play, including the 2000 Ravens, I wanted them to generate more variance with the things. And the 2000 Ravens, I mean, they gave up some plays. They gave up some plays to the New York Jets. But guess what? They won that game on variance with six turnovers, I think it was, despite giving up 500 yards. So it's not like the Ravens haven't played generally by that formula where they've been playing great defense.
And I think when they brought in McDonald, that's when they, I mean, again, like I'm not the X's and O's guy, but my sense is that's when they went more to the too high shell that allowed them to limit the explosives, especially against Joe Burrow and that Bengals attack, and, figure out a way to keep the lid on and prevent them from converting on third and fourth downs. But one of the things that he did very well, especially in 2003, they ran a lot of games in the pass rush that we just haven't seen with Orr. Like they would, I just think of Patrick Queen just blitzing like a maniac to pick the tackle and having Van Noy loop around on the inside for like a clean hit. And we haven't seen anything like that. So I'm curious, they brought in CJ Gardner-Johnson. They trade for Gilman. Those moves will allow them to get Hamilton closer to the line of scrimmage. He's great blitzing off the edge. I mean, he had three sacks in one game against the Colts in the first half coming off the edge. Gardner Johnson, someone that is good blitzing out of the slot. And so I just wonder if they're going to be, the other thing that they did last week that we've been clamoring for a while is they finally took one of their corners and moved him around and followed the top receiver on the other team. They allowed Wiggins to travel. So maybe we see more of that, put Wiggins on an island and, do some creative things up front to generate pressure.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And Wiggins traveling is something I want to see happen as needed, because I think he's the real island player they have. He's obviously by far the best corner they have. And having Humphrey on the other side, if you allow the other team to pick the matchup that they want, that is potentially dangerous. And we saw that happen with Brandon Stevens. You made another point about something. Oh, yeah, I know what it was. The Ravens so far this year have only played a four-corner dime. They haven't played a three-safety dime. Now, it is very common that you want a three-safety dime and a four-safety quarter are the two two defenses. So you need more safeties to play this. The addition of Gardner Johnson and of Gilman gives the Ravens the number of safeties that they'll need to do some of these really high impact quarter and dime packages that are what I would consider more like traditional Ravens football from their history. Certainly from the best years of their history have generally been with very aggressive use of extra defensive backs. I don't think they were getting it done with four corners. I don't think they provided that same ability to combine really good short zone play with the possibility that the pass rusher is going to get rushed in some new angle that the opposing offensive coordinator then has to worry about.
Yeah. And they, since McDonald came on, we've advocated for them going back to the dime, and they've really stayed in that nickel. And that was when Queen and Roquan were there. And frankly, they're two middle linebackers right now haven't really been getting it done. So I expect them to do some aggressive, substitution in this coming game.
Yeah.
I
think that's reasonable. I think it more than likely will happen. Brad, always great talking football with you. We'll get a chance to do this again in a couple of weeks, but tell folks where they can talk to you online if they want to.
Yeah, I'm on X at MC Bradley.
Okay, McBradley. There he is. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, bye week's coming up. I want to hear your ideas for a short. If you want to be on, that's great. I love this. Treat it like a talk radio station where you can call in. All I really want from you is about 3 bullet points on what you want to do. I don't want you to over-prepare to be on a short or try to do something we talk about in 15 minutes. So if you've got an idea for something that changes the entire roster building practice or something, that will have to go for the off season. We're not looking for 3 hours of content. But if you got a 15, 20 minute topic, love to talk to you about it. DMs are always open on Twitter. Brad, thanks again for doing this.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.